And move to the third case of the day, Wells Fargo versus Hindman. All right, for Mr. Hindman, Mr. Jernberg, you need to sort your papers out. All right. I hope I'm pronouncing Hindman correctly.
Yes, you are, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, my name is Don Jernberg. I have the privilege of representing Don Hindman. The question before the court is, can a company be forced to accept a loan when the persons responsible for making the business decisions for the corporation don't want the loan, try to stop the transfer of funds before any transfer occurs, and once a transfer occurs, act definitively and unequivocally to return the funds? Wells Fargo answers that question in the affirmative, as did the district court. They both get there in the same manner. First, they ignore the basic contract legal principle that a contract requires acceptance. Second, they ignore uncontested evidence and contested evidence. On the first point, the transfer of funds does not alone negate the requirement for acceptance and a meeting of the minds. In effect, Wells Fargo is arguing that the transfer operated as some form of legal crazy glue. Once the funds got there, you were stuck with them. You couldn't do anything about it.
Well, yeah, I got to tell you, I'm pretty confused about this case. The board of directors of Clark consist of D.J. Clark, D.D. Clark, and
Robert Early.
Early?
Yes. Okay. And there were other advisors.
But that's there. The board, right?
That is the board, and the other people were given a vote.
Given a vote?
In the board meeting, in terms of what was to be done, yes.
So, D.J. Hindman, is he called Don?
Or Don.
Don Hindman knows that the Donald Hindman is being taken out of the business side.
That's not exactly clear, Your Honor.
But he's chairman of the board, right?
He's retired in Florida.
But he's chairman of the board. The minutes say he's chairman of the board. He's presiding over the meeting.
He was chairman of the board. Whether he actually knew about it, he maybe should have, but whether he actually did, it's not clear.
He's there in the room.
I'm not sure that was correct on the board minutes.
The minutes show him as presiding over the board meeting.
He may have been on the phone. I apologize if I'm incorrect about that. So he knows at that point that his son is not to make any business decisions.
Now, I'd like to come back to that. But was that ever communicated to Wells Fargo?
Not that I know of.
So how did this deal look like any of the other loans that Don Hindman, D.J. Hindman, had made to the Clark Enterprises that were subject to the subordination agreement?
It differed very materially. The other ones were accepted by the company, used by the company, and the company did not attempt to reject the funds. That's the principal and very critical difference.
But this is signed by Donald D. Hindman as CEO of Clark. Sounds like all of the others.
Except for the very critical point. That's all on the offer side, okay? There's no doubt that Donald Jr. made a mistake, okay? He was stripped of the authority to make business decisions. There were emails that were circulated saying, before we do a loan, let's have further discussions. The people who were charged by the board to make the business decisions didn't want the loan to go forward. Once the offer side was presented, it was rejected. The same Don D. Hindman, okay, who caused the problem and was told, stop it, attempted to stop it.
Okay. Now, that's another interesting thing. if he's stripped of all of his authority, why do the Clark people say, stop this loan, reverse this deal? If he doesn't have any authority, why is he doing it?
Because as to Wells Fargo, okay, the authority on that bank account, okay, the Don Hyndman's bank account, he had told the Wells Fargo banker, Don Bassett, Donald will be the one who will initiate the transfer, and he took it that he'd be the one that would reverse the transfer.
So it would have appeared to Wells Fargo that Donald D. Hyndman was authorized to do what he did.
He was authorized, in their appearance, to initiate a transfer. It was also very clear that it was rejected.
I'm curious why the Clark people are all concerned about this loan, because the outside advisors and so forth, the turnaround people that come in, it doesn't hurt them. It helps them to get that extra $750,000.
Not true, Your Honor, I'm afraid.
Why wouldn't it help them?
Because it wasn't enough.
It's not enough to make it better, but it's something against which they can borrow.
But just to do that, to borrow the money so Don Sr. would lose the money to no benefit of anyone, didn't make any economic sense. And that's what the business advisors were saying, and that's why they rejected it.
Or at that point, were they just assuming the company wasn't going to make it and therefore don't put any more money in here?
What they said was, we need $3 million if it's going to make it, okay? We don't have – or we're going to have to sell the company and do a liquidation of it. But $750,000 isn't going to do any good.
When the $750,000 was not able to be rejected or sent back, did they in fact borrow $3 million?
No.
There was no more advances under the line of credit?
Oh.
That's what I mean by borrowing. Line of credit. Wells Fargo would require that you have to have that $750,000 in order to exercise their draw on line of credit.
No, the $750,000, and we can demonstrate, okay, wasn't used at all to take any advances, either on the 15th or between the 15th and 21st.
Would they have drawn additionally without having that $750,000?
Yes, they could. The documents show they could. We can demonstrate. And by the way, the affidavit of Mark Bruno, the CFO, says we didn't take any advances. So there's certainly a conflict in the evidence on that. But we could look at the daily cash collateral report for January 15th. That's the only cash collateral report in evidence. Okay, and if you look at line 22 of that report, it shows the amount that's available to be borrowed against. If you back out, that's the day that 750 went in. If you back that the impact of the 750 out, there's about $2.2 million that will support advances on that day. And on that day, as the record shows, Clark only took $471,000. So it was more than enough to take the advances that were taken. The same analysis can be done, and I've done it between the 15th and the 21st. There was more than enough. The amount of cash coming in that was, and this is all in the documents, the amount of cash coming in, when you break it down to 85% of that cash, which you can use to support borrowing, okay, that cash coming in exceeded by about $400,000 the borrowings taken during that period of time. So the fact that there were borrowings was not contingent upon the 750, and there's no evidence that $1 was borrowed that couldn't have been borrowed without the $750,000. Not one scrap of evidence on that. Uncontested evidence. Wells Fargo has said big advances were taken, but the documents that would actually prove it, evidence, are the daily cash collateral reports. We only have one of those in evidence, and that shows their allegations false. 750 had nothing to do with the amount that was borrowed on that day.
What other money was coming in besides?
the as goods were sold, cash would come into the cash collateral account. Okay, so it was replenishing at that point in time. It varied from day to day. Okay, and if you look at the cash collateral report, you'll see that some days have $1 million or more coming in. Okay, so there was a fluctuating balance at that point in time. But the whole point is the 750 never had any impact. Didn't need it, wasn't going to do any good, wasn't going to help the company out of their financial straits, and was only going to cause harm to Don Hyndman. Okay. The other point to consider here in terms of the $750,000 and the way it's being considered is, since nothing was borrowed against it, okay, there was no consideration for it. There was no, it was just a pure windfall, frankly, to Wells Fargo at this point in time. The fact that nothing was taken would indicate that that Don Hyndman's action caused no damages to. It would also indicate that the whole subordination agreement that they rely upon requires a loan to be created in the first instance. You cannot have that without the acceptance by the borrower. I believe that's the rest of my time is for rebuttal at that point.
Ms. Coley.
May it please the Court, my name is Sherry Coley, and I represent Appellee Wells Fargo Business Credit. Despite the position taken by, if I may refer to him as appellant, since there is more than one Donald Hyndman, this is a rather simple case. There are only two documents that this Court should be aware of in reviewing the District Court's decisions. That is the subordination agreements and the subordinated debenture. These two documents embody the intent of the parties and imposed legal obligations upon appellant Donald J. Hyndman in the repayment of funds. All other documents, all other email communications, all other affidavits in the record of this case cannot overcome the legal effect of these two documents. The subordination agreements are unambiguous and prohibited the payment made to Donald Hyndman on January 21, 2010. Wells Fargo and an appellant entered into a series of subordination agreements because Mr. Hyndman had historically loaned money to four companies we refer to as the borrowers. He was an insider, he was the former president and CEO of these companies, and it was common for him to loan additional subordinated debt, which the companies would use to pay vendors or as working capital. Wells Fargo Business Credit had a line of credit to the companies that they could draw on. And the agreement between the parties said that as subordinated creditor, appellant agreed not to accept any payments while an outstanding indebtedness was owed to Wells Fargo. Subordinated indebtedness in the subordination agreements was crafted broadly. It was meant to include any debt, any liability, or any obligation of every kind or description which the borrowers owed to Mr. Hyndman. And that, I think, is the linchpin for this case. There's a lot of different words that have been used by appellant to describe this transfer of funds of $750,000. Was it a loan? Was it a gift? Was it an offer? Was it acceptance? Strip all that away, the facts are clear that $750,000 was transferred to the borrowers, was applied to their Wells Fargo line of credit, and then they took additional advances from the line of credit.
Well, your records, the bank records, are a little confusing on that as to when the money came out of Donald J. Hyndman's account, when it went back to his account, did it go back twice, did it go back once and then get taken back out? That's very confusing.
The document that I think has raised confusion is Mr. Hyndman's trust account, which is in the record as 38-1, I believe. And in that trust account statement, there's an entry from January 13th that says the funds go out. There's an entry from January 15th that says reversed, and then there's an entry from January 19th that says a reversal didn't occur. When you look at that document in connection with the company's accounts, you can see that what had happened is while a wire transfer may have bounced to improper accounts for the companies, Ultimately, on January 14, they land into the cash collateral account of Clark National, and that is also in the record attached to the affidavit of John Kloss. It's record document 38.2. So if you look at the cash collateral account on January 14th, it shows $750,000 came in. On January 15th, that $750,000 is automatically paid to the Wells Fargo line of credit. At no place in the cash collateral account statement, so it covers the entire month of January, is there a transfer of $750,000 back to Don Heineman's Wells Fargo account. It's not in there. And the entire
bank. How does that match up with Heineman's trust account then, those statements on his trust account?
If I could go back in time and understand why those entries were made, I don't know. All I can tell you is that his trust account statement shows that funds left his account on January 13th, and Clark's cash collateral account shows that the funds came into the cash collateral account on January 14th. And
I'm concerned that we've got some facts that need to be adjudicated there as to the flow of the money.
Your Honor, I don't think there are facts that are material, that would raise a genuine issue of material fact that would warrant a remand to the court on summary judgment. When you focus on the cash collateral accounts and the master funding accounts, on the business accounts of the company, it shows that funds were received by the company's accounts, were used to pay down the Wells Fargo line of credit, and then were used to take additional draws. When you look at those accounts and compare them also with two other documents, so the subordinated debenture, which is a note, the borrowers signed a note. It had legal impact at the time they signed it, saying we are borrowing $750,000 and we promise to repay that.
Are you saying that the moment that note is signed, that Wells Fargo has control over the monies, even though they haven't been transferred yet? That the subordination agreement takes effect on the execution of the...
I'm saying that at the moment that note is signed, the borrowers at that point have entered into a loan with Mr. Heineman, that they have promised to repay Mr. Heineman $750,000. When you sign a note for your home, you're borrowing money and you're agreeing to repay it. The rest is wire transfers on where the money is going to go, but at the time Mr. Heineman, Donald D. Heineman, signed the subordinated note, he was borrowing money from his father on behalf of the companies and promising to repay it at a different date. It's a subordinated debenture, and then on the 13th, he sent that by email to Ms. Williams at Wells Fargo, representing that this is money that's coming in. This is the subordinated debenture. We want you to be aware of this and that therefore it falls under the subordination agreements. And once it's under the subordination agreements, then it's covered under that agreement between appellant and Wells Fargo Business Credit. So that he was not able to accept a repayment of that loan unless there were two instances that the subordination agreements allow for repayment. So he could get written consent from Wells Fargo, or it would be a scheduled payment. There's no evidence in the record to show that Wells Fargo Business Credit knew about a repayment of this loan, or furthermore, that they agreed to repay the loan.
Business Credit is one side, and then the bank itself, where the money was, because it seems that supposedly, what's his name, Hassett or something?
Bassett, yes.
Yeah, was, but he wasn't aware of what was going on the other side, apparently.
That's correct, Your Honor. Mr. Bassett...
Did the money go back and forth? Did he... He said something about being done, about undone, I guess it meant. And yet it wasn't undone.
That's correct, Your Honor. Mr. Bassett worked for Wells Fargo Bank, and Mr. Heineman had personal accounts that he had control over at Wells Fargo Bank. He did not work for Wells Fargo Business Credit, and that was Mr. Kloss and Ms. Williams, who had control over the business accounts for the borrowers. And so... Even though Mr. Bassett was communicating with both of the Mr. Heinemans, there's no evidence to show that either Mr. Heineman contacted Wells Fargo Business Credit and said, we don't want this money, we want it reversed, we don't want it to be under the umbrella of the subordination agreements. And that is perhaps the easiest way this problem would have been resolved. There is no direct communication by Mr. Heineman, the appellant, or his son that went back to Wells Fargo Business Credit and said, We don't want this money. It's a clerical error. We don't want it covered under the subordination agreements. We would like this reversed. And it's not anywhere in the record. It's not anywhere in the facts that are before you. What is in front of you is the fact that this money went to the companies at a time when they needed the money. They were financially strapped. They were looking for additional capital. And as the board of directors meeting indicated, as previous times in the past, appellant would loan money initially at the start of the capital campaign. Then over time, other individuals would loan money. For reasons that we don't know, that didn't occur. And so he loaned money. No one else loaned money. And then at some point, he was repaid. Shortly after that, the companies went out of business, and Wells Fargo was left holding a line of credit of over $7 million.
Well, I guess it sounds like the money didn't appear in two places at once, did it?
From the review of the bank account statements, I don't believe it did. It left Mr. Hindman's trust account on the 13th. It landed into one of the companies.
Never got back to Hindman, and then that was reversed. Didn't bounce back once.
My understanding, it bounced. Initially, the transfer went to a payroll account for the company, and at that point, so it bounced from January 13th to January 14th. January 14th, it lands in the cash collateral account of the company. Never got out of there, was moved from that account to pay down the Wells Fargo line of credit, and then, the borrowers drew on their line of credit. $750,000.
Well, did they draw $750,000 more than they had been drawing? I guess I'm not seeing that.
Sure. The daily collateral report indicated that non-AR cash. So the daily collateral report is what that is. It's the company saying this is what we have for assets. So we should be allowed to draw off our line of credit. They reported incoming $750,000 on January 15th. That was sent to Wells Fargo Business Credit. On January 15th, if you look at the bank account statements, which are in the record 38-3, and that is a different company account, it shows that $471,000 was drawn off the line of credit on January 15th. And that's part of the point, is from January 15 to January 21, the companies were allowed to borrow 100% of $750,000 from their line of credit.
Well, he said he would have been.
The companies were only allowed to draw certain percentages of what cash was coming in. And the significance here is that this was a subordinated loan. So if this had been a payment on an invoice, so say, for instance, the company had received $750,000 on payment of an outstanding invoice, they could only take $113,000 additional on the line of credit because when the invoice was sent out, they borrowed at that time. So now the fact that this came in as a subordinated loan meant that they could take the entire $750,000 off the line of credit. And that's where Wells Fargo has been damaged, because here we had a loan to the borrowers. They used it to the detriment of Wells Fargo. And then, in violation of the subordination agreements, Mr. Hindman was repaid. This is not a case where the documents are overreaching. This is an individual who had been loaning money on a continual basis to his companies. He was familiar with what these documents said. He knew that when he loaned money, he was not entitled to be paid first. Now, Mr. Hindman is suggesting to this court that when his son signed the subordinated debenture, he had his fingers crossed, and that therefore, his acceptance of a payment on January 21 of $750,000 is not subject to the subordination agreements. Mr. Hindman should be held accountable to the agreements that he signed with Wells Fargo. This is an instance where he benefited and Wells Fargo was left holding the bag with over $7 million. To allow Mr. Hindman to maintain and to retain these funds would sanction a fraud upon the court. I see that I have.
You said that the consent by Wells Fargo to repayments had to be in writing?
In the subordination agreement.
What provision of the agreement requires the writing?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it is Section 3. But let me confirm that. Yes, Your Honor. Section 3, if you would, it's Record Document 1-1 at 3.
All right. And there is this email from Bassett saying done. Isn't that consent?
Mr. Hyman certainly argues that is consent. It is our position that Mr. Bassett, working for Wells Fargo Bank, did not have the ability to consent to this repayment, and that there is no communication from Wells Fargo Business Credit that consented to this repayment. Instead, what we have is
the agreement doesn't say it has to come from credit. It says from Wells Fargo Bank, National Association, the lender?
Well, it does say acting through Wells Fargo Business Credit Operating Division. And at this point, it is Wells Fargo Business Credit that would have had control over the line of credit. It would have authorized repayments, or it would have allowed him to accept scheduled payments. For the reasons set forth, we would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think the most critical point is the confusion about whether any money was taken based upon the $750,000. Okay, they're saying it could have, might have, the documents would show it. We put an affidavit into the record from the CFO that said not one nickel was borrowed on the $750,000. There's a clear conflict of evidence there. The other that needs to go back for remand on this was anything borrowed. The other end of it that we need to address is still the acceptance point of the contract. Okay, I recognize that a debenture was signed by Donald. He shouldn't have done it. As soon as the decision makers found out about it, they said, stop it.
Well, is it shouldn't have done it or wish he hadn't done it?
Shouldn't have done it.
That's the problem. He's there. He's at the meeting. His father's at the meeting. They walk away. And the arrangement is made, and he signs the document. He tells Wells Fargo he's going to do it, and then he sends it to Wells Fargo.
And he shouldn't have done it because he didn't have the authority to do it, in fact. Okay. So the answer to that is he shouldn't have.
But his father, who's the chairman of the board, is in the very same room at the very same time.
That's true. Was he being persuaded by his son? He's 84. He's in Florida at the time of the transfers and all of that. In terms of the authority and the consent, I think there's nothing in the record that said that Wells Fargo Credit had to be informed that the money was going back. Tom Bassett's affidavit said he had the authority to do it.
Well, when Donald D. Hyndman is making all these arrangements, he's talking to the credit side of Wells. But then when he wants to stop the transaction, he goes to the banking side. He goes to entirely different people. I don't understand that.
No, to initiate.
He's dealt with Ms. Williams all the way up the line until these organizers or the outsiders say, no, don't do that.
To initiate the transfer, he had to deal with Bassett. That's where the transfer started. Okay.
To initiate the transfer.
So, and Bassett said he was the right one to go to stop the transfer. And if you look at the evidence, there's an email on the 19th, and the money did go back in and out. The money on the 19th from Don J. Hyndman to Bassett saying, send it to Gibraltar Bank. Okay, the wire transfer. So it's Bassett who gets the money out of the account, the cash collateral account for credit, and sends it to Gibraltar. So to argue he didn't have the authority to do it, he did it. And that's the only evidence. There's no evidence that anyone else was involved. He said he had the authority and was the appropriate one to do it. The thought that they were saying, one of the other things that we don't know here, a critical fact, is on the 14th, before the transfer occurred, Donald D. Hyndman called and said, stop it. So we don't know right now whether there was an error by Wells Fargo in failing to stop it, and we wouldn't be here had it been stopped on the 14th. Okay? And we don't know why it wasn't stopped. Donald thought he had called in time. When it appears on the books on the 15th, it's with a notation, originator trying to reverse. So we know the call was made on the 14th because it's noted in the record. Okay. 15 minutes after it hits the books, he says, it shouldn't have hit the books, send it back, it's a mistake. Okay. And as to the loan, if there was one by the debenture and all that, that's between Clark and Hindman. That's between Clark and Hindman. So if those parties say, we made a mistake, send it back, they should be able to do that, unless Wells Fargo is injured somehow in that process, which would be by actual borrowings, and we're ready, willing, and able on remand to look into that issue of actual borrowings to the 750.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.